Pseudopod, episode 112, October 17th, 2008. This week's story, Periods, by Florence Ann Marlowe. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from Florence Ann Marlowe. Her work has appeared in Black Moon magazine and the Hudson Reporter, although this story is unpublished up to now. Your narrator this week is Damaris Mannering. So, flick through that outdated magazine one more time and try not to read the articles in too much detail, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Periods, by Florence Ann Marlowe. It's going on 3 weeks now.
And there's no chance of you being pregnant?
Oh no. Nancy shook her head. I haven't even been with a guy in a long time.
Good.
Dr. Mason stood up, his eyes still glued to Nancy's chart. He flashed her a quick smile.
One less thing to worry about.
Nancy nodded. So what could it be? The doctor seemed lost in thought. He pressed the butt end of his pen to his teeth. He then quickly shifted in his seat, uncrossing and recrossing his legs. Nancy suppressed an impatient sigh.
I know exactly what it is, he said finally.
Nancy was surprised. Oh?
Endometriosis.
He waited to let the big technical-sounding word sink in.
It's nothing serious. You have a problem with your ovaries, really. Nothing serious.
Nancy sat up quickly. You're not going to take them out? She could see a whole life go by without children. Maybe without a husband. She was already 36, but she had never ruled out the possibility of family. Is it like menopause? Dr. Mason tapped at his incisors with his pen.
Oh no, not at all. It's very different.
Staring at his long, pale face and long, delicate nose, Nancy realized suddenly that she didn't really like this man very much. She should have gone to the GYN her sister had recommended. Watching his smug face, the tight smile was pissing her off more and more, and she wanted to get out of here, go home, and take a shower.
You see, when a woman has problems with ovulation, usually caused by stress or hormone problems, she'll develop endometrial tissue on her ovaries, which will cause her to menstruate constantly.
Nancy's face betrayed her confusion, and the doctor continued.
Your body thinks it's time to menstruate all the time, so you do.
He spread his long hands wide and shrugged. I hate this man, Nancy thought. So, what happens now?
Well, we can give you hormone pills that will counterbalance the hormones that are causing you to ovulate.
He pulled a small pad out of his desk drawer and took some time choosing a pen from the bouquet of writing instruments jammed into a mug. How long before I stop bleeding? She picked up her bag, thinking how expensive hormone pills sounded. The doctor sighed.
Oh, about 10 days.
10 days? Dr. Mason looked up, his eyebrows arched. I can't take this for another 10 days? He stopped writing and folded his hands in front of him. Nancy felt a surge of anger. If I hear one patronizing word of comfort from those slimy lips.
What can't you take? He asked.
10 more days of bleeding! Shit! 1 more day of bleeding! I've been bleeding for 19 days, damn it!
The pills will control that, he began calmly.
I've gone through 12 boxes of superabsorbent tampons. That's 240 tampons in less than 3 weeks. I'm ready to shove a friggin' rag up there. The doctor was staring at her, his face frozen. Nancy felt her throat tighten, so she was a little edgy. She hadn't meant to offend him, but this was becoming pathetic. Couldn't he see she was suffering?
Do you fill each one to capacity?
The question threw her off. What? No, yeah, definitely. More than capacity. I'd get the Super Plus, but they don't always carry them. He was regarding her oddly. Nancy could feel a seed of worry work its way into her brain.
Are you serious about that? Or is that just a number you made up?
He took a spiral notebook out of his desk and turned the pages, searching for something. No, that's for real. I buy 4 boxes every time I go to the drugstore. He found the page he wanted, ran his finger under some important line, and then slammed the book shut.
Really?
He seemed genuinely interested. That's quite a bit of blood loss.
Nancy's eyes widened. I'll say it is. That's 480 grams worth.
Excuse me?
The doctor eyed her curiously. Nancy laughed. That's what the boxes say. Each tampon holds 12 grams of blood. How much is that in ounces? She kidded.
Actually, that's almost 4 liters, he replied.
She stared back at him and he said,
It's a lot.
I thought it was.
The doctor had gotten up and was slowly walking towards her, prescription pad in hand, his dark eyes never leaving her face. Nancy thought he had a rather predatory stroll. He stopped and perched on the edge of the desk right in front of her. He smiled, a slippery thing that slid the flesh around on his thin face.
Do you usually have heavy periods?
Yeah, all the time.
Dr. Mason crumpled up the prescription he had been writing and lightly tossed it into the wastebasket.
Well, we'll have to take care of this right away.
He began a new script.
This should do it. I'd like to see you back here again in 3 days.
3 days?
Nancy could hardly believe what she was hearing. What happened to 2 weeks, call me if you have any questions? She took the prescription from him and glanced briefly at the ink scratches he had made. He was still smiling. He looked like a sharp, beaked bird hovering over her. His nostrils flared and quivered, and Nancy thought he was sucking in some dark, deep aroma into his lungs. She shrank back from him.
I smell, don't I?
Mason blinked. His visage softened and he shook his head. No, no. Well, all women are fragrant during their time of the month.
Nancy sighed and sat back in her chair. I feel like it's all over me. In my skin, my cuticles, even my hair.
Mason stretched out a long, lean hand as if to stroke Nancy's hair. She ducked her head out of the way. She wanted sympathy, but she didn't want him touching her. She felt dirty. Not Courtney Love dirty, but rolling in a loaded dumpster in the middle of August dirty.
It's the concentration of iron and protein in the blood,
Mason said as he sat back on his perch.
It can be very aromatic at times. Which reminds me,
he began to scribble on his pad again.
I'm also giving you a prescription for high-potency iron tablets. You'll need to take them 3 times a day.
Great, Nancy thought as she picked up the new prescription from his pale hands. Another $40.
And I'd stock up on those Super Plus tampons, he said. You'll start to bleed more at first.
Nancy moaned and dropped her arms to her sides in defeat.
Only at first, he soothed.
Nancy trudged unhappily to the door. His chipper voice called her back.
One other thing. Before you start taking those, I'd like you to run over to the clinic for an HIV test.
Nancy spun around.
What for?
It's all right, it's nothing. Just a precaution, that's all. Just to be safe.
His smile was absolutely fulsome. Nancy wanted to take her bag and bash his long white teeth in.
I want you to take this to a Dr. Roman Heldon at the clinic. He's a friend, and he'll get me the results right away. They're very discreet there. After you've had the test, you can start those pills every 6 hours.
Nancy whacked the door with her fist on her way out. She trod down the corridor, prescriptions crumpled in her fist. Male doctors, she thought. They think it's all a joke. She stepped out into the waiting room. Karen, the receptionist, had her ear pressed to the phone. She motioned to Nancy with one finger.
She's right here. I'll find out. hanging up, she opened a file on her desk. Nancy, are you married?
No.
Living with someone?
Nancy stared at the woman behind the counter.
No.
Why?
Just for your records. So, you live alone?
Nancy was losing patience.
Yes, but I don't see what that has to do with my period.
She glanced at the other patients in the waiting room, another woman and an elderly man who was probably waiting for his wife.
Probably.
The receptionist glanced up.
It's just for your records. Now, you just moved to town a few months ago. Work-related?
Nancy could feel it was time to run to the bathroom, the changing of the guard, so to speak.
Yes, new job. Is that all?
Karen smiled.
Yep, today's Monday. Is Friday at 7 good for you?
Nancy shook the stout little amber bottle of pills. The name at the bottom of the label meant nothing to her, just a long, multisyllabic word she couldn't even attempt to pronounce. The other bottle was full of deep magenta tablets. 3 times a day she was expected to swallow one of those baby torpedoes. Her throat clutched at the thought of it. The guy at the pharmacy had given her some look. With a wad of cotton taped to her elbow and 5 boxes of Super Plus tampons under one arm, she had handed him her prescriptions. Did he have to check them out before giving them to the pharmacist waiting in the balcony above the counter? It was none of his business what her doctor was giving her. She didn't like the way he seemed to study the tampon boxes before ringing them up. He picked up each blue and white box, regarding the labels, the content, instructions, whatever could have caught his eye. And what was it with those blue and white boxes? Every brand name seemed to restrict their packages to blue and white and green boxes. It was as if they were purposely avoiding the color red in their packaging. Drawing a glass of water from the faucet, Nancy tossed back one of the hormone capsules. It felt dry and papery on her tongue. She swallowed some water and then wrestled with the childproof lid on the container of iron tablets. 10 days, maybe less. She padded into the bedroom to change her tampon. She could feel the fullness of it in her crotch. They were giving up quicker and quicker. Every 2 hours or so she was changing them. At the clinic, she had to balance on the edge of the toilet, 1 foot in the air, her fingers stretching impossibly long to push the damn thing up there. A dog shouldn't suffer like this. She changed her tampon 4 more times before going to bed. A girl in high school, Wendy, swore you could use 2 tampons at once on really heavy days, but Nancy thought that sounded dangerous. Could she still get toxic shock? She unraveled the paper from the plastic container, as thick as a cigar. What if 2 was too much and it sucked all the moisture out of her? They could get stuck up there. She pictured herself having to go to the hospital and have them surgically removed, explaining that Wendy Pools had told her to do it. In her sleep, Nancy drifted in a sea of scarlet. It was cloying. The metallic smell, the sticky liquid tugging at her. She twisted, only to find her face submerged in a thick red ocean. She gasped, swallowing a mouthful of the stuff, her body convulsed, her chest hitching. The air was gone from her lungs, and in its place, hot liquid rushed in. Gasping, Nancy bolted upright. She heard a loud squish. Between her legs there was a puddle of red. Leaping from the bed, she saw an oval of blood in the center of her mauve sheets.
Oh, shit!
She hissed and peeled the sheets off the bed. The blood had soaked through to the mattress. Nancy tossed the bloody bedding onto the floor and sprinted to the bathroom for a cold wet towel and some liquid cleanser. The fibers of the mattress began to fray as she worked the cleanser in, and she stopped scrubbing. The dank odor of her own blood made her eyes water. A dark trickle skidded down her leg.
Shit!
Nancy squealed and dropped her towel. Running to the bathroom, leaving a wake of bright red, she grabbed a new box of tampons.
Things had better improve in the next 3 days, she snarled as she liberated her soaked tampon. It hung by its cord like a red mouse.
Nancy's mouth twitched. She dropped the offensive thing into the garbage and ripped the new box open.
There was no point in going to work the next morning. Nancy couldn't keep a tampon inside for more than an hour. She felt the swelling begin 45 minutes after she put a fresh one in, and 15 minutes later had to rush to the bathroom before it popped out on its own. An ever-growing pile of stained clothing made her give up on wearing underpants. She felt gruesome and unclean. By evening, her crotch was sore from the constant pushing and pulling. She could hardly sit straight in a chair. Her back and breasts had hurt for weeks, but now they felt as if they were bruised, her breasts swollen. The smell was everywhere. Every time she raised her hand to her face, she caught a whiff of metallic filth. The beds of her nails were tinted deep red, and she spotted stains in the whorls of her skin. Like Lady Macbeth, she scrubbed her hands constantly. The second day was worse. Not caring to explain her condition to her boss, Nancy told them she had chickenpox. This was going to last a while. She changed tampons nearly every half hour. They slid from her body, anxious to be free. The only comfortable position to do this was lying down. Towels covered every piece of furniture now. She slept on a bare mattress, protected by the thickness of 2 terry cloth towels, and prayed she'd awaken before her tampon filled up. For the 6th time in 4 hours, Nancy was lying down, changing her tampon, when she felt something crawl out of her. It wriggled from the lips of her vulva and past her thighs, making her shriek in terror. The image of some parasitic worm burrowing in her bowels tore through her brain. Throwing herself from the bed, she collided with her dresser, a shower of bottles and knick-knacks cascading to the floor. Afraid to turn around, Nancy peeked at the bed. A long, dark object, like a piece of liver, lay on the towel in a pool of blood that was slowly sopping into the towels. Nancy moaned, recognizing it as a huge blood clot.
"I can't take this any more," she whispered. Pulling through her bag, she found her address book. "I'm bleeding like a stuck pig."
She dialed up Dr. Mason, but the woman who answered claimed to be the service. He wouldn't be in until tomorrow. Did Nancy have a message?
"I've got a message," she growled as she slammed the receiver down. Tears burned in her eyes. This wasn't fair, she thought. Her crotch felt hot and full, and she buried her hands in the damp, bloody hair. One more day, and then she was going to give it to that doctor. He had some nerve subjecting her to this.
Again, she was floating in red. The liquid seeped into her mouth, and she was suddenly heavy, bloated. Her body sank. Her nose, her eyes filled with blood, she could smell it, taste it. Clawing at her throat, her arms beat at the rich redness as she swam, frog-like, through the river of gore. Nancy couldn't tell which way was up or down. She could smell the coppery odor strong in her nostrils. Why didn't she die, she thought, as she treaded the red waters. A pale figure seemed to be moving towards her. Nancy floated, expectation rising in her chest. The figure had a face, a keen oval of whiteness. It seemed to speed towards her, its body undulating rapidly like some blanched flagellum. Nancy felt an urgent need to flee, but she was dead weight, drifting. It darted towards her, the pallid face growing closer until its eyes met her own. She jerked from her sleep. There was a hot thickness trying to escape her crotch, and she fished the swollen tampon out. A ribbon of blood sprayed the mattress. Nancy felt an animal's sound gurgle up in her throat when the phone rang. She flicked the tampon into a plastic bag she had left lying on the floor near the bed. It landed with a splat next to its spent brothers. Hooking the phone with 2 fingers, Nancy threw herself back on the soiled mattress.
"Hello?" "Good morning, Nancy. This is Karen, Dr. Mason's receptionist."
Nancy grunted in reply. The cheerful voice on the other line continued. I just wanted to let you know that we got the results of your HIV test, and they're negative. The woman sounded as if she had just awarded Nancy a new car. So we'll be looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night for your appointment.
I can't stop bleeding, Nancy said into the phone.
The doctor said you'd be bleeding a bit more at first.
It's not a bit more, Nancy shouted. It's twice as much, 10 times as much. I sit on the toilet and it just pours out.
She began to sob.
I can't stand it anymore.
Just one more day, the receptionist chirped. We'll see you tomorrow at 7.
The receiver went dead in her hands, and Nancy felt a shriek of outrage boil up inside her. She bashed the phone down and jumped off the bed, ready to dial back the doctor's office. A rush of liquid shot out from between her legs, running down her thighs. She stared down her legs, watching droplets of the blood splatter on the floor. They were everywhere, she thought, little circles of brownish red sprinkled in the bathroom, out in the hall, on her sheets. She sat down with a wet squish. Her face puckered up, and she began to cry. For the first time in 3 days, Nancy was out. She had finally conceded to Wendy Poole's double tampon theory, and she walked like a cowboy. Dr. Mason's office was empty. Karen wasn't even at her desk. For Nancy, sitting was a new adventure in pain. Gingerly, she eased her butt onto the vinyl cushion chair. The familiar sting raced up her spine into her teeth. Please, God, she thought, let it be over soon. She was about to grab a copy of People magazine when the inner office door opened and Dr. Mason poked his head out. His nostrils looked huge and took a deep breath.
Good, you're here.
He flashed her that huge smile. We'll be ready for you in a minute. Before she could reply, he ducked back out of sight. Nancy grabbed the magazine and started flipping through it. Male doctors, she thought. Bastards of no respect for women's problems. Women's troubles. That's what her father always called it. When her mother went through menopause, her father told them she was having women's troubles. How could a man understand what women suffered? Nancy knew she'd been crotchety for the last 2 weeks, but who wouldn't be? Anybody would feel bitchy if they had to shove cotton bullets up their crotch every 2 hours. She turned the pages, fiercely. She should have seen a woman doctor. Even her sister's GYN was a man. If Mason didn't do something to relieve her from all this bleeding, she was out of here and into another doctor's office pronto. The door clicked open, and Dr. Mason motioned her in. Nancy got up too quickly, forgetting her sore bottom, and she cringed. The doctor smiled as she hobbled carefully into his private office.
So, how are we feeling today? He asked as he closed the door behind him.
I don't know about you, but I feel lousy.
Nancy settled into a chair.
I can't even keep a tampon in me. I've got 2 stuck up there now.
The doctor shocked her by laughing. Nancy saw a slight movement out of the corner of her eye and realized that Karen, the receptionist, was standing in the corner. The young woman was flicking a plastic syringe with one finger. She smiled brightly at Nancy.
Have you been taking the iron? Mason asked.
He sat on the edge of his desk, his former roost, and shrugged out of his lab coat.
Yeah, Nancy said. She watched Karen prepare a cotton ball with alcohol. Am I getting a needle?
Yes, you are, Mason answered promptly.
Karen brought the injection over and handed it to the doctor. He studied the gauge.
Did you call the office?
Karen nodded.
Yes, I did.
And?
No problem. She called in sick 2 days ago.
I thought she would.
He smiled at Nancy.
What's that for?
Nancy unbuttoned her sleeve. Mason approached her, needle in position.
Let's just say, the doctor smiled, you're going to need it.
The injection was cold, and Nancy's arm immediately went numb.
Is this going to stop the bleeding?
Oh, no, he answered, handing the syringe back to Karen.
What do you mean, oh, no? Nancy's tongue felt thick. You've got to do something. I can't keep bleeding.
Mason pulled out his notebook. He quickly jotted something down.
Can you smell it?
It took Nancy a moment to realize he wasn't speaking to her. Karen nodded, smiling at Nancy as her vision softened.
It's strong.
Mason was undoing his tie.
And did you set up a room for her?
All set.
Karen flopped down in the chair behind Mason's desk.
Did you call Roman?
Done.
Nancy's eyes felt heavy in her head. They felt like they might just roll out of her skull and drop onto the floor. Mason looked up at her for a moment and then returned to his notebook.
Get me some tape, was the last thing she heard before she surrendered to the blackness.
When she first began to regain consciousness, Nancy thought her mouth was full of blood. She gagged, bucking wildly, only to find her arms restrained. Her eyes were misty, and she struggled to see straight. Her mouth moved, but no words came. Her lips felt as if they'd been erased from her mouth. Mason stood by a small cart. She could hear something bubbling like coffee. There was an odor, dark and distasteful, so familiar. She attempted to move, but her arms were fastened to metal poles that stuck out on either side of her. She tried to pull them free. A painful pinch of the skin cautioned her, and she gave up the fight. Silver tape strapped her arms down. The same pinch tugged at the corners of her mouth. Looking cross-eyed, she could see a plastic tube extending from her mouth, curling over her head. More silver tape held the tube in place. Above her hung a bag of pulpy brown liquid. A thick moan escaped her throat.
Hi, Mason said casually.
He smiled and walked towards her.
Just relax.
Nancy's eyes snapped open. She shifted her legs and noted that her feet were taped to the legs of the chair, but it wasn't quite a chair.
I know this isn't pleasant, but it could be worse.
His lips slid back from his teeth. He looked positively carnivorous.
Trust me, it could be much worse.
Nancy felt weak. A nylon harness dug into her flesh. Cold metal rings and chains were lying against her naked skin. The sudden realization that this was no medical facility made her ill. Her head dropped forward as she fought a wave of nausea. She could see her bare legs. The chair she sat on was made of wood, a hole cut out beneath her bottom. The soreness was still there, only now accompanied by a burning sensation further up her crotch. Her eyes strained to see what was there. More tubes projected from below, leading way to several different machines. One tube was filled with a pale yellow liquid. The other was filled with what looked like red ink. Mason juggled a few bottles from the cart and chose an empty one. He glanced at her amiably.
This won't be so bad, Nancy. I've had great success with this process before.
He strode over to one of the machines Nancy was hooked up to and checked the gauges.
It's really worked out well for us.
He looked back at her.
For me and others like me.
Tapping a few buttons on the machine, he set the glass under a nozzle. The thing made a noise like a cappuccino maker.
I know I really don't have to explain anything to you. It's not necessary, but I am a physician.
Mason pulled a chair over to the machine and took his seat.
I feel a need to comfort, to assure.
He chuckled.
Of course, I know none of this really matters to you, but like I said, it could be far worse.
The machine made a loud fizzling sound, and a squirt of crimson drained into the empty glass.
Over the years, we've found it more and more difficult to find what we need to survive. You can't count on superstitious villagers anymore. The police hunt you down so efficiently nowadays.
About 2 inches of the red stuff filled the glass before the machine became silent. Mason picked up the container and held it to the light for scrutiny. And everything is so modernized these days. It's amazing what technology can teach you. Things like filtering, homogenizing, and pasteurization, for instance. He jiggled the contents of the glass and smiled. The resources you find online would amaze you. The impossibly red fluid swirled in its receptacle, and Mason shook his head. Your blood, menstrual blood, is so rich. It's heavy with proteins and iron stripped from the deepest inner parts of your body, the bits needed to create life, all concentrated in a capsule of red nectar. He glanced up at her and winked, kind of like a shot of the best espresso. The door opened and Karen stepped in. She barely glanced at Nancy. Turning to Mason, she said, Who says you get the first taste? He grinned back at her.
I always get the first taste.
With that, he brought the glass to his lips and sipped. Karen watched with expectation.
Well?
The doctor licked his lips and nodded.
Good. Sweet.
Nancy felt her vision slip. The croaking sound she began to make made Karen step forward and check the tube sticking out of her mouth. Mason continued.
As you can see, we'll feed you and look after you like a vascular cow.
He gestured at the tubing. The restraints, unfortunately, are necessary, but you'll get used to it after a while, and if you want, we could sedate you, although I'd rather not. He held up his glass.
It does involve another step in the purification process. Gets a bit expensive.
Karen was writing something on a chart. She glanced at Nancy.
What was her name again?
Nancy, he answered. I meant to put up a little sign.
Karen shrugged.
Listen, Roman and Betty are outside, and a few of the others are coming. Michael can't make it. We're going to use up what we have in the fridge.
Mason drained his glass and nodded.
That's fine. We should be getting a little better than a liter from her after today. I've upped the hormone shots.
The two busied themselves with cleaning up, checking the machinery and Nancy's tubes. She watched them, wild-eyed, her breathing quick and erratic. Mason checked her chart again and made a notation. From far off, Nancy heard a doorbell ring. Karen slipped out of the door, and a moment later Mason followed, clicking off the overhead light without a backward glance. Nancy sat in the dark. Voices tittered from outside. She could hear the common noises of an evening with friends, doors opening and shutting, laughter, and the tinkle of glasses. Her face felt tight. After a while, all she could hear was the hum of machinery and the dripping from her tubes. She hoped they would realize that she would need to be sedated before the night was through.
Cloaks don't sell anymore, which is a shame, as I have yet to see anyone who looks less than awesome in a really good cloak. Likewise, estate agents don't have to travel to far-off lands to deal with clients. Mental health institutes are, at least sometimes, an order of magnitude better than Bedlam, and freighters almost never run aground in Whitby Bay anymore, and big spooky dogs never ever jump off them when they do. Actually, thinking about it, those last couple of things are probably good ones, but my point is this. It's tough these days for a vampire. No more jauntily wandering the streets of Bremen with your coffin under one arm looking for your house, oh no. These days it's all synthetic blood and angst and long trench coats. These days it's running in fear from ex-cheerleaders with murder in their heart and a stake in their hands. These days it's Wesley Snipes stamping on your face, or Ryan Reynolds being funny at you then stamping on your face, or Jessica Biel stamping on your face whilst listening to techno. So, you can see how the creatures of the night might have had to get a little bit creative. You can also see how horror authors who like to work with them would have to get a little creative as well. And that's certainly what Florence Anne has done here. No more cloaks, just white coats and suits, balance sheets and business cards and banal evil. The vampire has gone upscale, because let's face it, castles are so last century. Pseudopod relies on you to pay its authors, and it couldn't be simpler. Well, actually, now I come to think about it, it could, but I'm pretty sure a disembodied pseudopod hand T-1000ing out of your monitor is pretty much guaranteed to freak you out. Instead of that, just go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. We really appreciate it, and more importantly, so do the authors who your money will pay. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod has Mr. Pointy on standby, just in case.